You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Between the two of them, Kenneth Lonergan and David Rabe have pretty much done it all when it comes to writing for stage and screen. Their plays have been produced both on and off Broadway. One or the other has won a Tony and received an Academy Award nomination, adapted his own plays to film, written and directed his own original screenplays, collaborated with other writers on screenplays, and adapted novels to film. Most recently, David Rabe has added novelists to his list of writing credits. They join me now to talk about writing for theater and film and the rewards and challenges of the different mediums. I'm very pleased to welcome them back to the show. Hello.
Hi.
This question is for both of you. Did you start off writing for the theater, or were plays just your first recognized successes, David?
If you go back to college, I started writing in fiction first.
Mm-hmm. And you've just returned to that?
And I've returned to it, yeah, in the last 6 years or so. Very quickly I was writing plays, too, in college, but sort of did everything. But prose was the first.
So it was always... It was plays. If you had been born 30 years later, it would have been screenplays.
Maybe. I don't know. There's something about theater that got me in a way that film, even though I've written it in film, lately anyway, I don't have the same love for it.
Kenneth?
I started writing fiction in high school and then quickly switched to plays because there was less material per page on a play script than correcting prose. I wrote science fiction stories in high school, and then my grandmother told me about a one-act play contest the name of the town, but anyway, it was called the Thatcher School for one-act plays, and I don't remember the name of the town, but it was where the Bionic Woman lived, and I wrote a one-act play, which was a sort of a rip-off of Network, which was out at the time, and I won third prize and $100. And we had this great theater teacher at my school, so I started writing plays then and didn't get into screenwriting, but dropped fiction except for one project, which is still unfinished, and then didn't get into screenwriting for another until I was 30.
But that does seem anachronistic, doesn't it?
I don't think so. I mean, I know lots of people who are, you know, occasionally guest teach or visit NYU or Columbia, and there's lots and lots of kids who, I mean, I think they all want to write screenplays to make money, but there's a lot of people, I've seen tons of people interested in writing plays who are very young.
Well, what do the plays offer that writing a screenplay doesn't? Obviously, there's a live performance aspect, but have you ever acted, David? I know Kenneth has.
When I started off, I did, and in college a lot, and in that period I was writing stories, I was writing play, or a play. I kept rewriting the same play over and over. I did act a lot in college. And in grad school, too, for a while. And then I stopped after I got out of the Army.
But it's part of the thrill that you write this thing and then people get up on a stage and they say your lines and make them into something beyond what you ever imagined?
Well, in the beginning, for me, it was the fact that it was an autonomy to it. You could just do it. Whereas a film seemed... At least when I was beginning, it seemed beyond reach in terms of the economics and the scale of it all. Whereas a play, which I did at one point in college, you write it and you could put it on, and if you found a facility.
So. And now you've returned to writing for the page, so that would suggest that there's an appeal of doing it yourself and not having to deal with all those other people in the collaborative process.
Yes, there is. I mean, but it's also kind of the nature of the material, the nature of the idea, the nature of a narrative is very different to me. And what you can cover, the kind of space you can occupy, and the detail, and then the long haul, which earlier I really wasn't capable of. The sort of play as a sprint in a way.
Kenneth?
Well, I think that's true. You can get a little room and some friends and some chairs and an audience and do a show when you're a kid. But now they do the same thing with video camera, DVD cameras, and so I don't know if that's such a factor anymore. I think people tend to do theater because they enjoy it, they know it's not likely to make a lot of money for them. And I don't know. There's something people they're always saying how it's dying and it's. Ticket prices are certainly the main factor in if it is dying, but I don't think it is, and I don't think it, I mean, I remember everyone saying the theater was dying in the 80s, and it wasn't, and I don't think it's going to die. There's the people just, they seem to actually be attracted to the art form, which is encouraging. And when you're working on theater, everybody there is in show business in some form and could be somewhere else where they were. So it's got a nice feel to it because of that. It has a silly feel to it sometimes as well, but the movies have an evil feel to them, which the theater just doesn't.
Well, but David made this other point that some things lend themselves to the written page, some things lend themselves to movies, and others to the constraints of the stage. So when you have an idea, do you think, well, this is something I can put in a room and keep in a room over two acts, and so it probably would work best on a stage?
Yes. I mean, your first question, the fun of doing a play instead of writing a story is that another person's imagination is going to bring it to life, and it is in that when it's working well, a really wonderful collaboration between, you know, you and the actors and the director and the designers.
I've always wondered how Shakespeare would have reacted to some of the Hamlets that have been performed during my lifetime. He might have thought, wow, that was great. I never even thought of that. Or, oh, my God, what are you doing to me?
There's a line in a Woody Allen movie. Character says, if Jesus could come back and see all the things that were being done in his name, he'd never stop throwing up. And I don't know how Shakespeare would feel about it. I have a feeling he was very savvy about acting and production, and I think they do a lot of extra things to his plays now, because I'd like to see a straight production that was well acted and well produced. I think when they start setting it in all these different strange places, they haven't quite worked the play out yet, and I don't generally approve of that type of thing. Sometimes it works.
Yeah, I think one of the things, though, that the theater offers is the language. I mean, I think the spine of a play is, or the soul of a play is in the language, whereas film, it's not really true. Language is secondary. It can be. There are obvious exceptions. Like he mentioned Network in another context, but that's a film where language is really at the heart of it. But
in film, there's even more white space on the page when you write a script
than there is
for a play.
The majority of the time, there's, you know, whereas a theater, you start talking about Shakespeare, you know that it's, the core of it is language, and the energy is all in the language. And so, which in a film, occasionally it happens, but for the most part, it doesn't welcome that.
I don't know, there's a lot of movies that it's common in Hollywood for them to all say it's a visual medium, but they don't quite know. And then they have all this terrible dialogue in it. And then the movies that you remember, you usually remember the dialogue from, and you remember the lines, and you wouldn't want The Godfather or Casablanca or any of those films without the dialogue. And in the olden days, they would have much longer dialogue scenes, and it's got to be out of fashion a bit, except when someone does differently and it works. And Quentin Tarantino writes long dialogue scenes, and John Paul Anderson does, and you do, David. And I think with a film, though, one thing is that there's so much more ways to tell the story with a film. There's so much more available just having made only two as a director. It's daunting how many different things there are ways to express what's happening. Whereas on stage, you have you have lights that go on and off, and you have people coming on and off the stage and talking, and music if you want, and that's about it.
Well, what happened with You Can Count on Me, your first of those two films? Had you ever thought of it as a theater piece?
It's not when I thought of it as a full length piece. I had originally written a little skit, but it was 12 pages long. It was a lunch scene between the brother and the sister. And then when I thought of it for a movie, I immediately thought of I added the little boy to the story, and instantly thought it had to be a movie because the picture was about the two kids' relationship to the town that they lived in, and I wanted sister, it wanted it to be a very beautiful but isolated and limited place. And one thing the theater is not good at is giving you a real sense of the great outdoors. It's very hard to do that successfully in the theater, I think, except with poetry, perhaps.
And then it works the other way, David. They take a play, which works perfectly well in a room, and they open it up.
Yeah, which we have to do to some extent.
Doubt, for example.
Doubt was pretty successful, I thought, as an interpreter. I thought it was pretty successful, both as a play and a film. But in my own case with Hurley Burley, which was one that we opened up, again, I thought you really can't take something like that, and that's very language dense, and I perhaps didn't cut enough language from it for the film, but I was quite happy with the film and the way it opened up, and you know, the cars and all that stuff, and we stayed close to what would be authentic. But I do think you, again, depending on the material, and that play, you really had to try to open up, and because it well, out the language lightly.
Something like 12 Angry Men or Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you can pretty much do a film version of the play as long as you don't make it look like you're doing a film version of the play.
But I think those are big challenges that were very successfully met. And I think it's when I'm watching a film, once I realize that these are the only people I'm going to meet and this is the only room I'm going to be in, it's very hard for me not to lose interest very quickly for some reason. I don't know why, but
even though you're a playwright.
Yeah, and it's not, there's something about it, there's something about, the theater is more, it's odd because you're in the theater, you don't expect, you sort of accept that that's the situation when you walk in because you can see the actors are there, you can see the rest of the audience, you can see that the set is not real. So your imagination is helping out already a lot more than in a movie, which can show you everything if it wants to. So I remember seeing, what's that play about the four English people who all sleep with each other and are mean to each other?
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah. and they type on computers,
yes.
And I can't think of the name.
Closer. I saw Closer, and it was all good performances, but there's a last scene, and I it's not a criticism of Closer, but there's a last scene where one of the two characters says, I want to be with you. And the other character says, why? And I said to myself, because you're the only other boy in the movie. And it's just, I wouldn't have said that to myself seeing it on stage.
So there's a different kind of suspension of belief when we see a film than when we see a play. And is that something that is in your mind, I'm speaking to both of you now, when you're writing?
I don't know.
I find it. I've never. Whenever I start, a lot of my screenwriting anyway has been adaptations, and I don't find, and I know that you have to operate differently, mainly then you're translating someone else's material. It's usually a novel, and trying to operate in a very different way. And you know, in a play, at least the plays I've written, you often can sort of catch a wave and you just go with it, and you can go as long as you want. Movies in general, you have to sort of know that you're operating in a very fragmented way. You're going to do three pages and then you got to go somewhere else and make it, you know, you have to keep it. The scenes don't ever flow. It doesn't mean you can't have quality dialogue or quality characters or anything like that, but you can't do that, what I feel is the sort of linguistic thrust of theater, or that again in the older tradition of theater is far more apparent. I think it's still relevant to theater, but I think it's far more apparent in Shakespeare and Moliere, places like that.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with my guests David Rabe and Kenneth Lonergan. We're talking about being playwrights and screenwriters. In the case of David Rabe, also now a novelist and the father of a wonderful actress who's starring on Broadway these days, Lily Rabe. Stay with us for more. We're back with Kenneth Lonergan and David Rabe. We're talking about being a playwright and a screenwriter, and a writer in general, when you choose to do one or the other, and why one is satisfying in some ways and not others. I would assume that one big difference in theater and in film is that it's much more likely that the writer will get involved in the process, the rehearsal process, often gets consulted even during the run of the play, whereas in films, in most cases, not all, unless you're also directing as you've done, Kenneth, you're pretty much expected to disappear after you hand in a script.
Well, that's one way of saying it. The other way of saying it is that you get fired. Pretty much from the only screenwriting jobs I haven't been fired from, and it's not because they're unhappy with you, it's just because that's how it works in most Hollywood situations. They feel there's something they may be missing if they don't get somebody else to look at. The closer it gets to the production and actually spending all this money, the more nervous they get, and so they tend to get rid of you and get someone else.
Wait. So when we see a script that's with three or four names given credit, it isn't because they all sat around in a room and they said, hey, what should we have these characters say? You wrote a script, somebody else wrote a script, somebody else wrote a script, and then you all wind up getting credit?
If you see an and spelled out, it means that that's two separate people. If you see a symbol for an and, then that means that's a writing team.
Oh, boy.
The screenplays that this is there's a lot of variation here. The screenplays that it depends on the movie completely. I mean, if it's a smaller movie or if it's someone who writes and directs and has enough clout or has a protector to save to defend their words, then a screenwriter can be it's noblesse oblige in many cases in Hollywood or in the independent world. You have a little more power. The playwright has. If he's willing, he or she's willing to assume it has the final say on everything, mutual approval on everything, and the final say on the script, absolutely. And everyone is there ostensibly to serve the play. Nobody's there to serve the screenplay. And most screenplays you see from studios are not written by the writers, but by it's a very chopped up process. And sometimes it turns out well, but usually I think that's usually the main reason for the poor quality of poor quality movies is that anybody can change. When I suddenly became more successful after Sundance Film Festival 10 years ago, I had a series of meetings in Hollywood, and everyone I met said, we have this script for you to rewrite and direct. And this was before I had seen the script or said I wanted to rewrite it, but it was assumed that I would want to rewrite it and direct it, and it was everybody said it, and that's a fairly appalling state of affairs. So as a screenwriter, you have no power whatsoever unless the director chooses to give it to you.
I think that's the key. Occasionally you have a relationship with a director and you can be allowed into the room, so to speak, or on the set. It all depends. On Hurley Burley, I wasn't on the set, but I was had a managed it and finally was involved in the editing of the movie. I have at least 10 screenplays that I was hired to write that, at least 5 of them are pretty good, I think, that lay on a drawer somewhere. And, I've been paid very well, and that's the way it is. And you move on from there.
Some people actually make nice livings writing screenplays for movies that never get made.
But, that's really, in my case, it's how I made my living. The theater is very difficult unless you have a play running constantly to make a living in. So.
On the other hand, it's been reported that you've had some disputes with theater people. Joseph Papp, Mike Nichols, for example.
Yes, it did. So, on occasion.
So even in theater, there are the same sorts of problems?
Well, I think there's a very, very specific and after very successful relationship and cooperative relationship with both of them and different on streamers with Mike Nichols and had a great time. And then on, and Joe did a lot of very good work with and prior to having problem. And those are long, complicated, nuanced stories of difficulty that it's impossible to get into here, but
I wasn't asking.
No.
I'm just simply saying that it isn't as though the movies are always a problem and theater is always wonderful.
I think there was it's less so now in the theater, but I recall what I would call the tradition of where the playwright was thought of, despite legal authority that he does have, that Kenneth was saying, as what I called the mad woman from the attic, that you were down, you come down, deliver the script, and then they wanted you to go back because you didn't know anything about acting. This was assumption, a subtext. This is not true of either Mike or Joe, but there was this, you know, you really didn't know how to, you just were going to be a problem, and they preferred that you go back to the disappear. But
well, on the other hand, it seems to me that we've seen a lot more successful films in which the writer directed. It is a tradition in Europe, and we've had a fair number of really great ones in this country. But that often when playwrights direct their own plays, it becomes a problem.
I think it's a prejudice, personally. I think there's a convention, and I have to agree. It's not that the theater is all fun and games. It's just it's not the same kind of – the problems you get, they're arguments between individuals. It's not a hired hand against an organization that's hired you and can fire you and rewrite everything you do. So it's a very different – when you have problems in the theater – they are quite different, but and now I forgot the question because I was. Can you say what the question was again?
I've said that when people direct their own plays, not as successful as when they direct their own film scripts.
I think most directors are not so good, so that would include most playwrights as well. So there's a very strong, and I think it is a prejudice against playwrights directing their own work. And it's hard to – directing is really hard, deep art. And, most directors – a lot of directors who are successful, in my opinion, are successful because they're good at casting or they're good – or the people, right? They surround themselves with good people. The director is actually the only person in the theater who doesn't need to be there and whose work is not necessarily it's exposed. And it's impossible, in my opinion, for a theater person to be sure what's the director's work and what's somebody else's. If you have a director who's no good at all, for instance, or inexperienced or has the wrong idea about the play, if the writer is there and will speak up and the actors are experienced, they can fill in the holes. And if there's a lighting designer and a set designer, they're going to have to come up with a set and a lighting. And the director, on the other hand, obviously a good director is vital to a good production, but
I've always thought the director was responsible for creating some kind of consistency in the productions. All the actors seem to be on the same page, and they don't just stand always on the left side of the stage.
Well, yeah, I think what Ken is saying, there is a truth to it, but I also think, you know, that really good directors is a rare, and not rare, but a wonderful thing to have.
Yeah, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and especially if you see the play the same way. But I also think that it's, you know, the issues go beyond that, and in terms of the playwright directing, there I agree is a bias. I mean, I tried it once, got murdered, and said, well, this is, and I felt like the production was very successful. But
have you ever thought of directing a film?
You know, I don't have the. I did, of course, at one point, but I just don't. I've ended for the novel. I went for the novel. Because I don't feel I have quite the social skills that are required to direct a film. I barely had what was required to direct theater, although I did pretty well. But I have a bit of a reclusive side, so the novel has come at a time in my life when it's quite welcome.
And the great thing about the novel is that nobody else can be there to muck things up.
Not for a long time. And then you get an editor, and that's usually, if you get a good one, which I did, it was very helpful. But the long haul of a couple of years, at this point, I couldn't have done it when I was younger, when I was writing the plays. I could not have holed up and written a novel the way I did this time for years. But now it's very welcome to me.
Do you rewrite a lot? And if so, do you have more trouble rewriting a novel, which is so much more material?
You know, it all depends. The novel I did rewrite quite a bit. Plays, there's sections, you know, you rewrite a lot, and other sections that you never touch again. That's what I find. They come out, and the trick is to match those parts that you struggled with so no one can tell the difference between the one that was really difficult. So.
My guests are David Rabe and Kenneth Lonergan. We're talking about writing plays and writing films and writing for novels, writing your own novel. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Kenneth, your plays haven't been made into films. Does it seem like something you might want to do at some point?
I actually want the three plays that I've had produced that people know about. I actually want to make a film of each of them. two of them, I think, would be fairly easy to adapt, the three plays, the Waverly Gallery, and...
Well, that has a lot of overlapping dialogue.
Yes,
you'd want Robert Altman to be doing it.
Well, I've actually... the sound people get very nervous about overlapping dialogue on a film set, but it actually seems to work out all right. You know, it's not that tough to edit as I thought it would be. But And this play Lobby Hero that I wrote, I think would be possibly a better film than a play because I always felt the action was crammed a little too unnaturally into that space. The other play, This Is Our Youth, I very much wanted to make into a movie, but it's the only play I've ever written with continuous action in both acts, and it fits very naturally into the space. And except a lot happens, but you don't really notice it, and I don't quite know how to open it up without wrecking it. I haven't been able to figure out how to do it.
David, in your case, both of you have adapted novels into films. Now that you've written a novel, do you think you would approach the material differently?
I mean, where do I adapt my novel and try to adapt
it? Well, I mean, when you adapt it, you worked on The Firm, didn't you?
Yes, I did. There was several of us in that one.
That's in one of those collaborations.
Yeah,
and the same thing happened with you, Kenneth, with Gangs of New York.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I was the last of four writers. Only three of us got credit, but Hussein Amini did a draft did a couple of drafts, actually. But I was the last one, so that was... And there was a guiding artist in charge of the
Martin
whole thing.
Scorsese.
So that's different from the usual... write the script, and then you're asked to rewrite it again, and then they get someone else to rewrite it further over a period of years.
But I guess my question to you, David, was that one of the things that novelists often will say is, I didn't want to write the script because you just have to sacrifice too much from your novel when you're writing a film script. Too many things have to go out the window, and it's better for somebody else to do it. But since you've also written novels, do you think about that when you're adapting somebody else's novel?
I don't think I would. I haven't really faced that issue or written a screenplay since I finished the novel. I had written another novel earlier, but I don't think so. I think if you take the job, what you do, usually you're trying to look at the material and you're trying to hew something out of a larger piece and try to find what is the essence of it, and then and find a way to put it into more concise terms, because normally a novel is several hundred pages, 300 or 400 pages, and you're trying to bring it down to 120, say. So the big job is to capture the spirit and be more concise about it all, if possible. I mean, it's and then you end up with your own interpretive stuff too half the time, and then if there's a director, you get input and so on. But
sometimes you get major disappointment, don't you, Kenneth? You wrote the original Analyze This, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But that wasn't such a disappointment because I wrote it in order to be able to quit my job as an industrial writer for a commercial, internal commercials for corporations. I wrote stuff for a company would be hired out for like a sales meeting. You'd write the speeches for the Lever Brothers annual meeting, etc., and Dow Chemical and all these wonderful things, and you'd write comedy skits for a sales rep meeting. And before that, I'd been writing for the Environmental Protection Agency for 2 years, which was
could be very funny too.
Well,
that was before the Bush administration.
No, that was during the first. That was during the first Bush administration, actually, and it was a very interesting experience. I spent a lot of that job asleep in the cafeteria. But I wasn't very diligent. But anyway, but they didn't need a lot of speeches either. I never wanted to be a screenwriter because I had enough friends who were screenwriters that I knew that it was that your screenplay would almost certainly be taken away and changed. And so I never wanted to put anything that I cared deeply about into a screenplay. But I was tired of not having enough time to write and not making any money. So I blew my Weight Watchers convention job and stopped being hired, and then I borrowed money from people and spent a year writing this script, which I thought would be a good commercial movie, whatever that means. And I wrote it knowing that it might be taken away and changed completely. And in fact, that's what happened. But I got paid so much money as a first-time writer. It's such a good day job because I lived off that script for 3 years, the one script. And
even though not one of your words appeared, other than the of and.
No, the title is mine. Analyze This, which it was originally Analyze My Gun, but then I thought that was vulgar, so I changed it to Analyze This.
Now, David, you wrote a number of plays based on your Vietnam experiences, or at least inspired by your Vietnam experiences, but your novel, Dinosaurs on the Roof, centers on the Rapture. Is that something that you've always been interested in?
No, but a certain element of spirituality has always interested me, and sort of the feelings of mortality and what's going on. But I grew up in the Midwest in Dubuque, Iowa, and a friend of mine had sort of the initiating event of the book happened to them, where an older woman came visit her. The woman's about 36, my friend, and said at the time, and said that she knew her. Would she come over in the morning and take care of the older woman's dogs and cats? And of course, my friend said, "Well, sure, but why?" And the woman said, "Well, I'm going off in the rapture tonight with a few people from this local church, and I'm worried about what's going to happen to my dogs and cats once I'm gone." And that just sort of stuck in my head for a long time about, and the idea that if you're really believed you were about to fly off to heaven with Jesus and you were still worried about your dogs and cats, that it said something deep about how we relate to our lives and what you know, the hold that our life has on us on here. So that was that's what kicked it off, and that's where the rapture fits in. But it's also about the younger woman, who is nothing like my friend was, but has her own sort of ordeal going on. And the two women are in sort of parallel, but a different downward. One's downward, more or less downward. The other is sort of upward trajectories.
Do you see yourself writing for the theater again?
Yeah, I have things in the works, and I've just done some revisions on a play that was done at Yale a few years ago, and I'm working with a little theater in Dallas to finalize. I've been very lucky down there. That's a good place. And so I have some other things in the works, but my focus is I finished another novel, and my focus seems to be there.
Regional theater, something we talked about last time, writers, many people in theater have found regional theater a lot more welcoming than Broadway's because of the economics and other factors. In your case, Kenneth, there was a film called Margaret. Are we going to see that?
I certainly hope so. I've been working on it long enough. Yeah, I hope that's going to be released this year. The editing process was protracted for a number of reasons. One of them was just it's a hard film to edit, and then the rest of it was a certain amount of arguing and politics, etc. But I think we're coming to the end of all that, and I'm hoping it will come out this year, which I'll be very happy about. And it has the performances are spectacular, and I like the movie. I think today I like the movie, and I think it'll be okay. And I'm doing, but I've been, I was supposed to do. I have three plays I'm waiting to do. One of them's finished. One of them needs a rewrite, and one of them I haven't figured out how to end it yet. But they've been stacked up because I've been absorbed with the film. But this play I wrote called The Starry Messenger, we're going to do. Definitely doing next year with Matthew Broderick. He's my best friend, and it's based on an astronomy professor who we both went to a class at the planetarium when we were in high school. And there was this very gentle, somewhat dry astronomy professor who we went. Matthew's mother also came to the class. We went twice a week, and it was really, we loved him.
Well, I look forward to all of that, and my great thanks to the two of you for being on our show today. Kenneth Lonergan, David Rabe. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. It's been fun.